All lines are now bridged.
All right, thank you very much, and hello everyone, and welcome to the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are glad that you can be with us today. I'd like to welcome our co-chairs, Aaron Mary and Carolyn Peterson, along with our work group members, Stephen Lane and Brett Oliver. Jim Gerges, another work group member, is not able to join us today. But now I'd like to turn it over to Aaron and Carolyn to get us started. Aaron, Carolyn?
Yeah, happy Friday, everybody. Welcome. Look forward to today's talk. And it's a Friday afternoon, so we'll try not to drab on too much because a lot of people are, wrapping up the day here. So let's get into it. Carolyn?
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for stopping by on a Friday afternoon.
All right. All right, so from agenda perspective, obviously, we'll do a discussion of the draft crosswalk and the HITECH only report, discussion of draft outline and some story ideas. Again, the stories are a way of trying to put a lot of technical jargon and comments into what this would mean for the patient, what does it mean for the provider, what does it mean for our hospital experience, and try to explain to folks the importance of the different facets and elements that make up each of the sections of the annual report. We'll go to public comment, then, of course, we'll adjourn. Next slide. All right, so for meeting schedules of work group, obviously we are at the October 15th. It just surprises me every time I say these dates. We're in October now. So again, we're doing the develop the draft crosswalk, and then November 16th and December 17th, we'll be drafting the HITECH, we're drafting the report, and then sending it to HITECH for review in December. Next slide. And of course, meeting schedule for the full committee for the HITECH, November 10th, we'll provide another update. We just did a miniature one. I did a brief overview 2 days ago for the group. Just let them know it's in flight and to solicit feedback. We'll do another big one, hopefully, on the 10th. And then, of course, January will be the review, get some more comments. Usually that's when we get some really good comments in that end up on our to-do list or investigate list or for next year's list. And then, of course, February timeframe, approve the final FY21 annual report. Next slide. All right, so next steps to development of the HITECH annual report is review the draft report and then present the draft report for discussion and approval at the HITECH meeting in 22. Next slide. All right, so discussion now, the draft crosswalk. And Michelle, so I'm going to lean on you. What specifically you would like for us to go into?
All right, so you can go in order, starting from the top. And we left in the blue text that were comments from HITECH members and added in red text, usually as recommended HITECH activity language, that was based on your feedback, the work group feedback from our last meeting. So it's really the red text that you're reviewing today, and I left the blue text for context.
Got it. All right, so I see red dots. If you scroll over, please, so we can see what the comments are. So what you said, I said, so Michelle, just to clarify, you want to talk about what's in red, right?
Right. And I think we do see, there are a couple of extra comments that are showing up. Sometimes they don't on the screen, but they are. They can also reference. There are a couple of places where I inserted the text you requested in the spot where we talked about it, but sometimes maybe it belongs in another topic now that it's been written and you can see where it evolved. So there are a couple of comments like that to consider, and that does happen in this very first one, actually, whether I want to keep it here or put it in the incentives. I think I already put it in incentives in this case. Rather than
so if we each go to full screen display inside Adobe, it blows up what you're showing, and that would allow you to zoom out a little bit so we could get a little bit more context. I don't know if that made sense, but it's hard for me to sort of, yeah, that's great. That works for me if it works for others.
I'll squint. Let's see. Well, that's why we get copies of these in our inbox so we can read them ourselves on our size 25 font. Let's see.
There you go.
All right. Okay. So, all right, here we go. So that first one there is identify rules of the road for operationalizing standards for and addressing implementation variation of public health data exchange. And Michelle, this in red came from HITECH members or ourselves, right, as we walked through it?
Right. A lot of times the red text is, you had a lot of discussion, so I tried to summarize and synthesize what you all said.
Right.
The wording isn't literally from anybody specific. Usually it's sort of a compilation of your discussion.
Yep, that's what I figured. You'd listen to our conversation, try to put it in plain English. Okay. Right. So for really for Stephen's benefit, this is really a lot of us talking through it and working through the nuances in the last meeting with all of us with Jim on the call too. So what we're trying to figure out is, does this encapsulate what we were talking about, right, for each of these in red? All right. So again, from that proposed activities, identify rules of the road for operationalizing standards and addressing implementation variation of public health data exchange. I mean, I think that's pretty much what we had talked about related to public health data systems and infrastructure. Any dissension to that? I mean, I recall our conversation. That was pretty much on par.
Yeah. Are these rules of the road specific to patient matching or more general?
This one was more general about normalization of data elements and data standards and what could traverse. And I remember this is a story that even Brett was talking a little bit about in Kentucky and sharing data with the public health reporting agency, that sort of thing.
Great.
I believe it was this one, so.
Yeah, it was electronic case request.
Yeah, that's it. It was ECR, yeah. I have no issues with this. Anybody do?
No issues here.
Okay. Carolyn, anything?
I'm good.
Okay. All right, next slide here, incentives. Continue to explore the ways that the ONC Health, I just read the whole thing, Health IT certification program can support data exchange between public health organizations and stakeholders, including clinicians, payers, patients, laboratories, and then explore how ONC certification program can be aligned to other public health certification programs, electronic lab reporting certification, certified immunization registries receiving data from EHRs. Yes, this was about the CLIA lab comment I brought up. Can this be inserted into CLIA lab certification and those sorts of things? I think this pretty much says it. What do you all think?
I'm good with it.
Brett? Stephen?
Yeah, Phil, I know what you're
Phil just reviewing it here.
Yeah. You're reviewing it and taking care of patients at the same time.
And eating lunch. It's really cool.
And eating lunch. Well, that's your position. Yeah, you got a multitask. That's part of the MD, right?
Yeah, this looks good.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Let's go down, please. All right. It's all blue, so we're going to keep going to the first red there. So I see the first red as a public health. Yeah, there we go. So that public health data systems, that funding silos column, and in red, we had so I'll read the proposed activities, so I'm going to read it straight. So partner with NCVHS to identify barriers to and potential opportunities for public health use of HIEs and health data utilities where available and affordable. This is, I think, Jim's comment, if I remember right. I don't know what health data utilities are.
I mean, that's a term that's been coming up a lot. The idea that, you know, that HIEs can perform a lot of services. Some of those are kind of, you know, utilities where they are helping with data transmission, data, you know, cleaning, normalization, et cetera, you know, and then there's sort of the traditional HIE role of collecting all the data they can and trying to normalize that and create longitudinal records. But they're sort of different things. So I think in the public health use cases, it's really more about the data utility concept where they're supporting connectivity and data flows, and less, you know, less their core kind of HIE services.
I see your point. I got it. That makes sense. Yeah, I got to start using that nomenclature. I just call it all HIE, but you're right. It's not all HIE. It's a lot of other stuff. You're right. That's a good point. That's a great point, actually. All right, I have no issues with this. Anybody else do?
Nope.
Right, you good?
I'm good, thank you.
All right, next one, ELR and ECR, favorite topic of the day. All right, again, proposed recommended high-tech activities. I'm just going to read them straight because it makes it easier in my head as I read it all out. So learn about this experience of government agencies like the CDC and state health departments developing tools and sharing data for electronic case reporting and assess what gaps remain, partner with NCVHS to identify gaps, collaborate with convening groups across the federal government to encourage both adoption and advancement of the technology and standards supporting data exchange for public health purposes. This is, I think, Jim's comment about that sort of White House task force or something that was together trying to convene folks and how we partner with them, if you recall.
I think the one addition that I would have is in that red bullet, I would say standard supporting bidirectional data exchange.
That's fair.
Really, really trying to push on public health making their data available to other stakeholders, providers, patients, potentially payers, in addition to them just having the catcher's mitt.
Yep.
100%, Stephen.
Yeah, the bidirectional, I think, makes sense.
Well, it becomes an asset. Instead of it being total cost on the provider of the data, you're actually going to get something out of it other than maybe decreased labor costs if you do things automated. Because right now it's just a black box of costs and mandates.
That's true. Carolyn.
Well, and I think related to this, a piece of this is getting the public health entities to accept the electronic case reporting in lieu of manual case reporting, to not continue to require duplicative reporting once we have ECR up and going. And I really do think that's worth calling out as a specific recommendation. The other thing that came out of ECR is that the ECR model that was put together through Digital Bridge includes the response back to the reporter, that the report was received. It's called the reportability response, and a lot of the EHR vendors are not really doing anything with that yet. They haven't built the tools. There's a real opportunity with APHL, and the public health entities to actually send not only I got your report, but also to send back specific recommendations related to the reportable disease in that reportability response. This is what we know about antibiotic susceptibilities in our area, or this is, the isolation period for this condition, or you should do retesting. So I think there is a specific need to encourage health IT vendors to really advance this bidirectional exchange and to build the functionality to take full advantage of that. Because again, Digital Bridge built that in, but Epic and others really aren't doing much with that return receipt document. So I don't know how to kind of capture that here, but I do think both of those are key recommendations related to ECR.
So it's both the send, the bidirectional send, and the acknowledgement of receipt.
Well, then also encouraging, whether it's through certification or what have you, encouraging the EHRs to actually accept those receipts and route them, filter and route them accordingly.
Yeah, I think so. So what we had talked about, I don't know if it was last meeting or in prior meetings, Stephen, was trying to understand all those little nuances and get them documented, which is the whole point of partnership and collaborating and learning and documenting. And then, how we can, I don't want to use the word enforce, but encourage, right? Strongly encourage folks to make the acknowledgement that they both can hook up and receive bidirectional, and then of course acknowledge they receive the data. So exactly what you were saying, part of the way our structure has been thus far has been to try to put it out there, let's convene the groups and learn and do working sessions and then document and then, go towards action, because to figure out what those bugaboos are, why won't they do that? Right. I think we all know why they won't, but why won't they do that?
So I think that perhaps one of, again, we've got collaborate across federal, but I think this also needs to go down to the state and local level. Again, if we want them to, if we want to encourage / enforce them accepting the electronic reporting in lieu of manual reporting.
Okay.
That's the other point.
That makes sense. So suggest that convening groups across the federal, state, local governments to encourage, and kind of like we did in May with the giant public health meeting that we called with people from all over the country and just hear from what's going on.
Yeah, but I guess I'm being a little bit more prescriptive too, just saying that we need to figure out what are the levers we can pull to kind of force the public health entities to, CMS is doing what they can to encourage hospitals at least to utilize ECR, which is great. But then on the other side, we need to figure out how to force public health to receive that and evolve their processes so that the automated electronic reporting is sufficient. Because we need that carrot for providers of them being able to stop doing the manual reporting.
Agreed. No, wholeheartedly agreed. I can see that pain here in Florida now. So I'm going to propose something, Stephen. Let me see if this makes sense to you. So if in this red text, we immediately address the across the federal, state, local governments, right? So we address the sort of the catcher's mitt across. And then we have an opportunities section here, right? So we could put your more tactical, look for levers is the wrong word, but Michelle, I'm sure you can find the right word, but find what is the WIFM and the way to encourage people to take action, right? What is the carrot and stick to make that happen? That's an opportunity. So it wouldn't be an activity. It would be what's the opportunity to make this, right? So these are the things we're going to do to make that opportunity occur. So it takes it out of the like high tech, go do this, but high tech needs to do this, but these are the things we're going to do to make this part happen. Does that make sense? So we're going to capture what you're saying. I'm just saying put it in the opportunity section.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Again, and it's an opportunity to work with public health to encourage their, receipt of and full utilization of the ECR and to work with both public health and EHR vendors to more fully take full advantage of the return receipt or the reportability response.
Got it. I like that. That makes sense. Brett, Carolyn?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you all were saying. I was just thinking through the cultural change that has to happen in public health. And I don't mean it in any disparaging way. With Stephen saying get these receipts back that then could offer some essentially clinical decision support at the point of care, like that is not something that the public health entities that I've been engaged with think about. And so, an active engagement, active care, it's more like, oh, we collect the data, we show trends, we report. And it's all kind of 90 days, 120 days, 365 days later. This is kind of a change in mindset. If you believe that you're part of active management and care, you have to have this bidirectional capability. Anyway, I don't mean to get off in a rabbit hole, but I agree with the way you phrased it.
Well, I mean, we now have one of the worst, deadliest pandemics, in modern history that we've just gone through and continue to go through. Hundreds of thousands, 700,000 plus people that have perished. More worse than the Spanish flu of the late, 1918, 1919, at different 20 time frame. So I think now is the time to put these things on the table and say, listen, we want to avoid this ever happening again. This is what we got to get towards, right? Is this active surveillance model is what you're really talking about.
Yeah, that's fair. But that's why I think we started with the federal piece. I'm a state's rights guy, but I think there has to be, and I don't even mean a mandate, but just some structure to it. Because if we're going to ask these local health departments and things to do this, I don't mean they couldn't, but you're going to end up with a bunch of different ways of doing it. If we could outline at a federal level, what the state's
if Eisenhower could envision the interstate system, right, and we go create it, and I know it took 50 years to build, but we finally did it. Every state adopted national highway standards. Surely. We can. It just took a lot of money, a lot of incentive to make it happen, right? So there's got to be a way here. I'm not saying that's the way. I'm just saying there's got to be a way.
Yeah.
It's I tend to believe in the good of the spirit of this country. We can figure it out. Like, I think there's enough brilliant people here that, yeah, there's a lot of opposition, but there's enough goodwill, especially when you have a precipitating event. I think it's the right thing to do to throw it out there and just see what we can do.
Yeah, and I love that, Stephen. I mean, that we're going down to the local level, because you're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah, and when you can't just say state, by the way. You have to say federal. You have to say state, tribal, territorial.
Yes.
Or else the public health people get really upset.
Fair point. Yeah, and that's where Michelle's magic comes in. She keeps us wordsmithing appropriately.
There's a politically correct way to say that.
100% agree with you. I always tell people, I'm an engineer. I'm not a wordsmith person. So I will say what's on my mind, but that's not really what I mean sometimes. So, all right.
Well, it's not politically correct. It's inclusive.
It's the way inclusive.
That we bring everybody on board with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. All of those folks are involved,
right.
For sure.
Absolutely.
All I'm saying is that people get very sensitive about it, that's all.
All right. So are we all in agreement with the changes for that section?
Yes, sir.
All right, perfect. All right, let's move on then. All right, public health data systems is the next one, I think. If you scroll down, is that right? Yeah, there we are.
Actually, Carolyn, just before we leave that, let me just comment on that, because I think the use of the term politically correct can have different meanings to different people. When you grow up as a hippie on the West Coast, that's a positive thing. It's good to be politically correct. I know in other parts of the country, when you say politically correct, it's a negative thing. So just to be clear.
And just, you know, for clarity, I'm thinking of the use where it's the way that we code that we're going to say something to make somebody else happy, even though we have no intention of making a change that underlies it.
That wasn't where I was going at all. So just to be clear.
Good deal. All right. All right. So next section here, public health data systems, in the red here, convene a listening session to better understand barriers to sharing minimum necessary data sets. Yep. With public health authorities, and then assess public health activities and systems to understand what is needed to shift to using HL7 fire standard or another approach. I remember this discussion about minimum necessary data sets. We said it wasn't just HIPAA, it was just minimum necessary data sets. So I think that's like verbatim what we had said. And then it was about what standard approach versus just using a flat file or fax machines. Like how do we encourage HL7 fire or APIs or whatever? This seems to capture, I remember this conversation. That seems to capture what we were talking about. Am I wrong?
No, I think it captures where we were.
Yeah. Steven or others?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about this, the whole minimum necessary challenge with non-treatment public health use cases. And the transition to fire would help to avoid a lot of the problems we have today where, you know, systems can either exchange, you know, bespoke data files that they've been asked to provide, or they have to build an HL7 interface, or they have to, you know, rely on a CCD when that's all that their system can exchange. And I think that's what we're trying to capture here.
Yep. Totally agree. Okay. Brett, any concerns?
Nope, nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay. I think that's the last red text. Is that right, Michelle?
I think so. I think you have kind of two larger issues down below to discuss in more depth. Weren't fully discussed last time.
Two larger, are these where the bubbles are?
So page 6, the one that was based on that proposal from Terry O'Malley, you'd want us to do...
That's right. I forgot about this. Thank you for pointing this out. That's right.
Yeah, so the comments and the mayor, with a little bit of research I pulled together for you. This might be the one I also sent you a separate write-up from our contractor of what they were thinking would go in our landscape analysis and gap analysis around this topic as background information for you.
ONC may present measurement efforts at the November 10th high-tech meeting. All right. So this one was an email that was sent by Terry. Carolyn, keep me honest here. It was like 3 weeks ago, I believe. And it was...
I think it was probably five.
5 weeks ago? Okay. Sorry. Right now, everything... Time is blending for me right now, so it all seems consolidated. Around transitions of care and a number of data points and data elements to capture and standardize on so that as a patient traverses care settings that they can be easily followed and it can be easy handoff and, you know, good quality reporting around it, all good stuff, like all great stuff. And I'm not entirely sure where the research came from, but I found it fascinating and a pretty relevant topic. So Stephen, I don't know if you had you got a copy of that, because I don't know if you were officially part of the committee yet at that time. But basically, Michelle and team went back and researched and said, okay, are there any overlaps? So are we talking about this? Because this has come up in several other conversations. And so it looks like we may find out more on November 10th, high-tech. And the measures in the task force do not overlap, but that's the measurement task force that was put together by ONC. The proposed measure on care summaries is generic and does not focus on the content needs of various care settings, okay? And for more information on the activities of eHealth Exchange, the document of attached research. All right. So, Michelle, basically what you're saying is this is an idea. Is it something that is... I guess my first question is, does this fall in our scope of activities? Is this interoperability, is this part of that sequence? And I'm not saying this isn't important, but is this a high-tech charge look at these things?
I mean, to that specific, I mean, Mike might need to weigh in. I think generally it's in your scope to talk about interoperability in various settings, healthcare settings, but as far as a charge for a future task force, that I can't answer myself.
I mean, there's clearly been a lot of work done on transitions of care, you know, and Terry has been involved, you know, and especially transitions in and out of long-term post-acute care. Holly Miller, of course, you know, has been championing with the 360X group, looking at care transitions. I think this notion of getting down to the data requirements to support safe and efficient care transitions, you know, it's an idea that's been bubbling up. It does seem to me that it would fall within the scope of Health IT Advisory Committee. It also, you know, may well be something that belongs in HL7.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this has been called out as potentially something related to EHR reporting. But I think it's hard to ask them to report until we have, you know, kind of a sense of the standards and requirements that they would be reporting against.
Right.
It is a proposed activity, perhaps, to have a, I think it would be a work group rather than a task force, engage with some small subset of HL7 to look at what's needed, you know, kind of lay of the land, where are we, do we need to be thinking about standards and implementation guide, or is there some stuff that needs to happen with EHRs first? No. Maybe it's just an exploratory thing. My guess is that Terry is passionate enough about this, you know, thinking about his comments over the past 4 years, that he might be really interested with another person or two in connecting with a small number of HL7 people for some very limited duration, you know, one meeting a month for 3 months or something, just to sort of see where things are, what's the go-forward approach. It might be that that's a way of working that would be applicable for other kinds of interests and queries that high-tech members identify as well. You know, things that are not easily covered or managed today, but that have some application down the road.
That's not a bad idea.
Or that support interoperability.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I mean, it's a very important topic. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to figure out how, you know, where the Lego piece fits in the puzzle. So, but it's a great suggestion. What I was also thinking, Carolyn, maybe a little bit variation of what you're saying was, is this potentially a U.S. CDI plus initiative, right? He leads some small task force as part of that, and it ties back to U.S. CDI, depending on what those elements are, as a proposal and an extension of that.
Well, you've got the guy right here in the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is defining subsets of data,
right.
I think, that are already largely called out in U.S. CDI. I mean, whether transitions of care require additions to U.S. CDI or to a U.S. CDI plus sort of data set is an interesting question. I mean, I would think that transitions of care would be core data for interoperability. Now, U.S. CDI plus is really aimed at this point, federal partners, you know, CMS and CDC. I would see it more as U.S. CDI work potentially. You know, if there are data elements specific to transitions of care that are missing from U.S. CDI. I think the other thing here is sort of the whole term transitions of care. You know, this is talking about transfers of level of care within a hospital. That's not typically, you know, what we use that term for, right? Transitions of care, which came, I believe, out of the High Tech Act, you know, had to do with, you know, discharges and referrals primarily. And then there's the idea of transfers of care within ADT, admission, discharge, and transfer, which are more like these changing levels of care, changing, you know, units within a hospital. So I think there's a need for a little bit of clarification of terminology, you know, transition versus a transfer, and sort of where those terms show up in applicable law. Again, I think all those are things that a little work group could address.
And I would argue that it's even broader than what is to be looked at is even bigger than that. From the consumer, patient, caregiver perspective, the transition of care is an ongoing journey where your elderly parent goes from home to the hospital, to the skilled nursing, perhaps to a nursing home, perhaps back to skilled nursing, perhaps to the hospital. It's this long period of changes from one place to another that are not necessarily in a particular order or for predictable durations. And it's all of the documentation that needs to follow and the care plans and the pathways that the family needs to be given in terms of here are the physical therapists you can call to manage this aspect of the orders that were written, but we didn't know who you'd want to use or who could come to the house at the time when somebody can be there. You know, all that stuff that's really important to the folks who have to actually manage the physical day-to-day outpatient stuff, but, you know, is not necessarily what any particular provider or stakeholder is thinking about.
And I think to that end, or in conjunction with that, one word that's missing from this whole discussion is coordination. I mean, this is partially about transitions and transfers, but it's about coordinating care across those transitions, which I think is part of what you were getting at there, Carolyn.
Is it worth inviting Terry to our next report work group meeting to just kind of give an update, like his perspective on this, and we kind of focus on this and just hear him exactly speak it out?
I think it makes sense.
Because I think you brought up some excellent points, Stephen. I completely agree with you. Coordination, yeah. And I just wonder if that's being lost in translation here somewhere, that's the intent. I don't know, right? It'd be good to hear from him and just talk through this for a few minutes, just see what's going on. Because he's spot on. It is something we should think about in some form or fashion.
And to that, I would say I think that's a discussion point that should happen at the fall High Tech meeting, because there are other stakeholders who might have input on that as well, thinking payers, research, potentially VA, you know, if they're involved in the care chain. if we do it here, then people have to make room for one more meeting on their calendar, and we're already getting into the holiday season.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. So as a proposal, could we put this on like an, I don't want to say parking lot, but I want to make an active parking lot. So we're actually working through it on the side and figure out the right venue to bring him forward to talk about it, to work through it. And it potentially is an item that we start talking about for next year's fiscal report, because we're getting close to the end of the year here. Or is this urgent enough we need to do it now?
It's in the valet parking. We can make it a question on our slide at the next meeting in November and just ask him for a brief clarification. And
right.
Anybody else that cares to comment can.
Stephen, you good with that?
Yeah. Did you say it was in the valet parking, Carolyn? Did I hear that right?
That's what I said. It's not in the parking lot. It's in valet parking.
The valet, yeah. It's like active. Like active.
I've never heard that before. I love it.
It might be helpful to get Terry to clarify before the meeting. He didn't have to come to one of ours, but because I do think in hearing him speak before that he's talking more transitions of care, the LTACs, the SNFs, the nursing homes. And back to something that Stephen said, I think it's important to go ahead and ferret out. Is it a question of there are data elements not included in USCDI that this particular area of care needs, I'm sure there's more needs than we have, but that it's beyond USCDI, or is it a technology question for these facilities? That's where, at least from a practical perspective, I see it. They'd be willing to do it. They can't. And they're not going to upgrade their system. They're not going to. It's not an issue of disagreeing with a standard. And I wonder if that point needs to be clarified before we bring it to the high tech.
We can ask them.
I would just like to get USCDI from any of those places. Yeah, I wouldn't need anything different. Like, yeah, sure, I'd love some other things, but if I could get that, that'd make a huge difference. It's a black hole.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we can argue about, you know, what's perfect, but man, I just like some good.
Okay. So I think then we have our marching orders for this one. It's going into valet parking. That's becoming an official term for report work group going forward. Valet parking. Trademark Carolyn Peterson.
You deserve it, Aaron.
I like it. All right. I think we have one more. If everybody's good on this one, we go to the last one here. And it is exchange, right? Yeah. Is that right? Am I doing that right? Exchange of data for transitions of care, is that right? No. Where are we? Here we are. Sorry, health equity. Here we go. I have it now. All right. Annual report work group. So the bubble is what we're going after on this one. And so report work group wants to discuss the topic further. It's ideas. Look forward to create a catalog of efforts across federal government. High tech can learn from and collaborate. Discuss patient-facing third-party apps accessing provider EHR via APIs. And for public health systems, and discuss large-scale patient data capture via apps like all of us from the NIH. So this is all about health equity and balancing the right of access and those sorts of things. Do we want to? I guess Michelle, you're asking us, should we add these items in here as recommended activities, or what exactly are you asking us besides cataloging what we were talking about?
I think this one we ran out of time. So I cataloged what was discussed as ideas so we didn't lose them, but we didn't get far enough along to change any language.
I think these are all great ideas. they're all opportunities. What do you all think?
We just need to set up a task force to get moving.
And to do these things as part of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen or Brett?
You're the co-tech high chair. High-tech co-chair. You can do that.
Sure. I'll just bang a gavel on the desk and off we go, right? That's how it works? Is that easy?
It is.
Yeah. Stephen or Brett, any recommendations on this?
I agree
with Carolyn, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is really important. This keeps coming up. And again, I think we're speaking specifically about access to public health data, right? Specifically through APIs or portals. And I assume we're talking about access both for patients and other stakeholders, as we were discussing earlier, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All stakeholders, everybody.
Right.
Right data, right place, right time.
Everybody who wants it and who by law can access it.
Right. Right. Who has a right to it?
For the right, that's good clarification. Good clarification. Yeah, I mean, I would, we need to get going on this, but I keep hearing something's coming. So.
Well, I think the idea of, you know, creating a catalog of what's going on, what is out there, you know, what are the applicable laws? Because, you know, unlike providers, payers, you know, I don't know how much law there is that says that public health data should be accessible to others. Again, public health has always been sort of a catcher's mitt and not, you know, not a data source. I mean, there may be need for legislation on this.
I can't imagine that there wouldn't be a need for legislation. If for no other reason than that states are different, territories and tribal, and you'd need something that would be an umbrella over all of them that lays out what's to be done, I think, or you would never, you would be forever stuck in the incremental progress and unable to really make a big leap forward because you'd be held back by various things. And yeah, I can't think of anything I've ever heard to imply that a patient or consumer can get any information about themselves that public health holds. I don't know that you can even find out what they're holding about you.
Right, right.
Even
yeah.
Even assuming they could figure out what they're holding about you, I don't think they could.
Even more important, yeah.
You have any right to that.
Brett, thoughts?
I agree with you guys. I think this is only growing in importance. And then you start talking bi-directional, you know, you're going to magnify the need for some guidance here.
Yeah. All right. So, Michelle, I think, you know, we're sort of encapsulating all of this by saying, you know, we need to convene some effort. I don't want to call it a work group, but some effort to really focus on this. And these items and ideas, inclusive of a lot of others, need to be part of that. Is that clear? Make sense?
Yes.
Perfect. Clear. All right. I'm trying to use the right syntax and terminology. I don't want to say task force or tiger team or whatever. So whatever the right nomenclature is, convening group, take a look at it. All right. That was the last bubble I see on the list here. What other items we need to clear up? Michelle, before we go to public comment.
Well, we have three other things to do yet today before a public comment, if you can get to them all, otherwise we'll roll over to November. But prioritization, that column on the far right, where you there's only two choices, which are noted at the very bottom in a legend. You have two tiers, immediate and longer term. So immediate is the next year or two, and longer term's out beyond that. So an indication, you don't have to commit today. We have a couple more months to keep playing with that, but to get started, because it does affect the drafting of the report, where things end up in the structure of the report is based a bit on the tier. So the sooner I have that feedback, the faster we'll move along on that.
Okay, and what's the other item we got to look at too?
Back in the slides, there's a one-page outline that we've used in past years, so kind of confirming that outline, and that helps me get started on the drafting. And then your story ideas. We have some early ideas of like one for each target area.
Do you already have early ideas?
Sorry?
you said you already have early ideas, or you're asking us for our early
ideas? Yeah, we included that in the materials. There's like one paragraph for each target area that would go in executive summary.
Perfect. Let's go to that. Let's do that.
All right. Can we do that one? Can we touch on the other ones because they're more urgent first?
Okay. That's all right. I thought they were all the same urgency. Okay. I got it now.
No,
all right.
Sorry. The tiers are most important, and the outlines next, and then the story.
Okay. So then we'll just start with tiering.
I'll start off the tier discussion by suggesting that we make all of the things in the public health target area immediate. They tend to work together in some respects and have some dependencies, interdependencies, and HHS certainly is looking at what it's thinking about, and ONC just launched the public health initiative, so it seems like a good time to build on that momentum and support it.
Yeah, I can support that.
Yep. I agree with it. Steven?
Yep.
Okay.
That's like the first three pages. First 3 pages takes us through in immediate. First 4, well, my numbering looks odd for some reason, but yeah, first 4 pages. That brings us to interoperability.
Looks like it.
So, topic patient matching.
The problem is that it goes hand in hand with public health. I mean, that's critical. I mean, that's been such a big bugaboo.
And if I recall last year on our first pass, 80% of it was immediate, so.
I think it's urgent. I do. I really think it's there. Other comments?
I'd say it's hard to argue with you, Aaron.
All right. Urgent.
I wouldn't want to argue with either one of them, frankly.
All right. Next one, Carolyn. Are you going to keep? You want me to take it, or you got it?
Increased health equity across populations, locations, and situations, some definitions. This is a convening a listening session kind of proposed activity.
When we say definitions, what are we getting at there?
Standards for consistent collection of health equity data elements.
Okay, separate from SDOH.
Yeah. To me, that doesn't need to be immediate. I mean, we know it's important, but I think some other things might need to happen first. And some of that will be dictated by public health or significantly influenced by what happens in public health.
And we're separating out the algorithm bias as its own thing.
So the gap is to ensure public health equity topic includes healthcare, that is the tracking and sharing of health information to support both health and healthcare equity initiatives. Challenge is that the collection of health equity data elements related to race, ethnicity, disability condition, and resulting impacts sexual orientation, preferred language, sexual orientation, and gender identity and data for SDOH is inconsistent. Opportunities, more industry standards supporting the collection of health equity data elements could be agreed upon. And so the proposed activity is to convene a listening session to identify barriers and opportunities related to standards. But again, I would think that there would be important influences from public health that maybe need to be clarified first that would help this and make it an easier lift and also help avoid creating a structure that's different from what comes out of the public health centered discussions.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't want to say it's not important. It's important, but is it more urgent than everything? Because we can't boil the ocean, but is it more important than everything else? That's the question we've got to ask ourselves.
In general, I think things that have dependencies or other things that need to happen first, those items probably need to go in the not immediate category to create the time, you know, for the other things to happen. And also because, like you say, everything can't be immediate.
Okay. So we were saying, is it intermediate or whatever that other category is?
Yeah.
No.
The next category.
Yeah, sorry, longer term.
Longer term.
Longer term. Okay.
So the next issue is increased health equity across populations, locations, and situations, algorithm bias. Here the problem is, gap is, efforts needed to better understand and reduce racial and ethnic bias in algorithms that supports decision making, particularly in support of public health needs. Opportunity, screen healthcare and public health data systems for bias and algorithms to improve data used for decision making. And again, the proposed activity is to convene a listening session to identify sources of algorithmic bias in healthcare and public health data systems and potential solutions.
So longer term, I guess, be the same as the first one, or the one before this, right?
I think it would be hard to do it without getting some of that groundwork on the public health data systems done first.
Yeah.
So that tells me it should be longer term.
Yeah. I see Stephen had to step away, go take care of some patients. That's important. So Brett, any concerns?
Yeah, no, I'm fine with the longer term.
Okay. Next topic. Interoperability standards, priority uses, closed loop referrals. There's a lack of cross-organization support for closed loop referrals. Challenges with lack of standardized systems can make closed loop referrals and prior authorizations an administrative burden to providers. Opportunity is to explore the opportunities to advance standards that can improve systems for closed loop referrals and prior authorization. Suggested activity would be to review the recent and planned activities of CMS and payers around standards needed for closed-loop referrals and prior auth. And I will let you guys kind of take the lead on figuring out where that fits in.
I think it's important, but is it more important than everything else, Brett?
I would go longer term. I feel like there's a lot of movement there right now. Amongst organizations, payers, even the EHR vendors to work on this process. It I make more sense to revisit it, you know, next fall to see where the industry is. But I guess I'm saying I'm fine with it being a longer term.
Me too.
Yep, agreed.
Okay, the next one is info blocking. We all know the GAP standard opportunity. The proposed activity is to convene a listening session to assess the establishment of measures of the impact of the info blocking requirements of the Cures Act rule across the industry in conjunction with ONC's measurement efforts.
I think that one needs to be now, shorter term.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of angst and state legislation that are being proposed with things like pathology reports, and it'd behoove us to have that earlier than later.
I would agree.
Okay. Then we come to exchange of data for transitions of care. This gets at the discussion we just had about Terry's concern.
So we're going to pause on that one, right? Because we still got some more clarity to get.
Yeah, that's in the valet parking.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll send it to the car wash before it comes back. Next one, now we're getting into privacy and security. Public opinion about impact of use of health IT on consumers. Gap is, does public opinion data already exist that encapsulates the user and consumer opinions about certain uses of health IT, like contact tracing? Challenge, is that not much is known about certain uses of health IT. Opportunity is to research these uses in peer-reviewed literature. Proposed activity would be access recent literature and suggest areas for more investigation. I mean, I'm feeling like that in terms of all the other stuff that's here, you know, I care about privacy, but I'm feeling like this is not as urgent as some other things.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, come on, it's your wheelhouse.
I mean, I'm reading it right now.
Okay. I'm fine with a longer term share on, but.
I mean, I think it's more longer term, to be honest with you. I said longer.
Okay. Groovy. Next topic, alignment of innovation and regulation. The gap is that innovation sometimes gets ahead of the regulatory environment. The challenge is that hospital systems are adopting APIs but are concerned about unauthorized data exposure and added liability. The opportunity is to align the health IT industry to accelerate innovation where existing regulations are in place. And the proposed activity would be to learn about federal regulatory activities for areas of health IT innovation and assess the fit and gaps.
I do think this is a big bugaboo. I mean, I'm hearing about so many health systems that just like sort of stop in their tracks because they're so confused about the rules and the rulemaking and everything. But is this more important than, say, public health? I mean,
I guess one thing that I think about too is what will the changes be if we waited a year to do this? Would it really be significantly different? Are we missing a major yacht here if we hold on it? Are we?
Probably not. Given 2022 is an election year, probably not. I think we'll be okay to wait a year.
I mean, it feels to me like something that wouldn't change overnight, but you guys are in a closer to it than I am, so.
Oh, boy. I could go either way, but I think it could wait.
I think it could wait. All right.
Okay. So now we're down to target area patient access. First item is safety and impact of mobile health applications. The gap is that as third-party apps continue to be introduced, there is concern about the clinical accuracy of the apps and the potential for patient harm. Challenge is that apps are built without using sound clinical knowledge can produce incorrect conclusions or readings. Some opportunities to support initiatives that review and rank validity and safety of apps, and to support awareness and education for patients around digital therapeutics. the proposed activity would be to define updates to past ONC patient access guides and educational materials needed since the start of the pandemic. To me, it feels like this is one of the few things where there is a direct impact on patients, and since there's a public health component to this around things people have been doing app-wise since the pandemic started and with the possibility of vaccination passports, this one might be something that needs to happen sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have 2 years to wait to get apps for vaccination. But I'm open
to just take it away from COVID. What was it, $20 billion in the first three quarters of this year on health IT? Yeah, we got to get ahead of this for patient safety and their sake.
Yep. Agreed.
Okay. And then another one for patient access. This is the increased health equity across populations, locations, and situations, and the accessibility of health IT. And here the gap is that the pandemic highlighted the digital divide regarding access to health IT by consumers. Barriers exist for the delivery of relevant public health-related information through APIs, portals, mHealth, and other digital distribution channels. Opportunity is to ensure that the information is available to patients and consumers in the same ways that they access other relevant protected health information and facilitate the largest impact and reach. So the proposed activities are many here, things like exploring barriers to the delivery of relevant public health-related information through APIs, portals, et cetera. Our HITECH members had a number of comments in favor of doing something around this that relates to supporting patient access to their data stored in public health systems, consumer protection process for electronic data storage that's easy to understand, education that incorporates plain language approaches, certification of third-party apps. There's a number of strategies pointed out here in this regard. Earlier, we noted the health equity items as being not immediate. Wondering if the public health component here makes us think about this one differently, or if this is also longer term.
I think this is important. I mean, we have such an issue right now reaching across and getting a hold. I think this is important. And we do it urgently, immediate, whatever it is.
Okay. I'm comfortable with that just because there's so much information that needs to be pushed out right now and things are changing. And we are in a period where there's a lot of innovation around tele-appointments, auditory appointments, different ways of engaging with patients and getting needs met. I can see that. What are you thinking, Brett?
Yeah, I agree with you, particularly that public health component.
Okay. Let's call that one immediate. And then our last item, this is in the emerging issues to investigate. The topic is robotics. Aaron's favorite, or current favorite. We don't have a gap here is that there's no regulatory framework for the use of robotics in healthcare. The challenge is that there are opportunities and limits to what the federal government can regulate around applied robotics. The opportunity is to synthesize a list of health IT use cases for robotics and identify regulatory gaps that can hinder development. Proposed activity would be to explore the health IT use cases for robotics and suggest elements for a regulatory framework. As I think about that, it seems like this is almost the kind of a project that ONC could contract to another organization that's something like AI, maybe that's RTI or others.
Because it does need to be done and clarified. Well, not done. I don't think you can be done with it, but I mean, we need to get some traction on robotics. And I mean, I'll be fully transparent. I talked to a company last week about using robots here in Florida to help out nursing, right? To take away some of the burden on them, given the influx. I mean, we had to sign up 100 beds on a dime because of a surge of COVID patients last week. And, you know, we don't have the staffing for that. So how do we alleviate some of the more routine, mundane things they have to do so they can just focus on patient care? So, but, you know, as I started digging into it, there's no real, like, applicable, like, follow these rules to do this the right way, right? Like, everything from patient privacy all the way to safety to quality to, you know, how does this tie in? What's the requirements there? Are there standards for robotics? I mean, right now it's kind of all over the map. People are just shooting for the hip. And I'm all about it, but then it's kind of like, well, crud, if I do this and then the rules do come out and change, then what, you know? So it's just one of those things.
There's also a component of which robots are medical devices and need to be regulated by FDA,
right,
as medical devices versus robots that just kind of do nice to have stuff or things that are not medical in nature. You know, moving bedpans around is not really a medical function. There, you know, certainly there have to be some kinds of standards around the handling of potentially toxic materials and hygiene and whatnot, but it's not really a medical device in the sense that a pacemaker is a medical device. So maybe this is a longer term thing, and there's some potential for interagency engagement or what needs to happen in terms of understanding where FDA sits with this before ONC could do something or the HITECH could investigate.
I would agree. I agree. So longer term.
Okay. That sounds okay, Brett.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Cool. Okay, Michelle. I think we got all the topics tiered.
Yes, that's fantastic. Very efficient. So if we could turn to the slide deck again and bring up the outline slide. Right, that's correct. So this follows the major sections that we've had the last 3 years in the report. No changes to that. I'll just note that number 7 is sort of a placeholder year after year because we don't really, it's something from the Cures Act that we need to address, but it's not something that fits the HITECH work so far. So it's usually just, you know, placeholder content. But everything else is substantive and already underway for development. And we wanted to check with you to make sure that this outline still fits your view of what we should do. And it does align with the Cures Act requirements of what needs to go in the report. There's an executive summary followed by a foreword from the HITECH co-chairs, a letter, an overview section. It's part of a report body. And then there's a progress report. We just ended the fiscal year, so now we can start counting up how many meetings and recommendations occurred. There's a landscape analysis, which is where we go into depth about the background and the industry-wide view of what's happening in health IT. And then a gap analysis, which narrows down and matches what's in our crosswalk, the various areas that you're making recommendations in. Then there's the recommendations themselves, that section I just mentioned, and short conclusions, usually only a couple paragraphs, if maybe just one paragraph. And then appendices, we have all our footnotes, we have a list of HITECH members and a glossary, and then any figures or tables that we want to add, which we haven't yet needed to do. We just have the table that's in the executive summary.
I mean, this looks fine to me.
I would agree. This makes sense logically.
And Brett, do you have any comments too?
No, I like it. It looks good. Better than I could come up with for sure.
Well, I helped a lot with this, figuring out what needs to go in the report. Sticking to that seems to guide us well. that's all I had on that. Within the report development process, there is a longer, more detailed outline that I work with the contractors on so that we can use that to start writing prose. This group, in the past, we used to share it, but then people, the feedback was like, that's kind of too much detail at that phase. We wanted to focus on the higher level picture at the crosswalk. So it's up to you if you want to see an outline like that or just go straight to the prose version. And I'll see what's ready by our next work group meeting on the 16th of November. And I'm backing up a week ahead of that, so I need to have things together for some initial review. So I'm not sure how much will be written by then, but I do know that the executive summary is underway. Now that the crosswalk's pretty much pinned down, I can start inserting that in the new format. And the progress section might be pretty far along because it's concrete information. And then I'll see if there's anything else written up that's reviewed and ready for review in November. It's definitely by like late November we start through email sharing actual drafts of the report, and then you guys start editing.
Okay.
In the short term, we do have ideas for stories for you. So I think we wanted to get feedback on if we're on the right track with the ideas themselves. We did go as far as writing them up instead of keeping them in outline form because it's easier to understand the idea, and they're short. It's only a paragraph or two for each. So we could bring up that document.
I need to step away for a second. I'll be right back.
Michelle, say one more time. What was our last item we needed to take care of? I'm sorry.
Stories. Look at the stories.
Stories, yeah, stories. Right.
Sorry.
So we've got to
communicate. Stories.
Yeah, stories. Got it. Okay.
We could zone in a little bit on the first one. Zoom in is actually the correct word. So there's for one for each target area, and we have four now, public health plus the original three. So the idea under public health, and we'll want Carolyn's feedback when she gets back, is about at the local level, thinking about a community that has a lot of tourism, so there are people coming in and out of the community, and they're trying to vaccinate, and they're trying to manage outbreaks. And then but they're also trying to share data. So this gets at the idea of data exchange and how public health entities might interact with HIEs, and then what clinicians can do once they have that data.
So it's interesting because, I mean, I'm in a high tourist area, very close to a cruise, major cruise port here in Florida, and this is exactly – it's like you put Aaron on this first one here. So, yes, I totally get it. Yeah, I mean, with data exchange that's normalized and it's easy and it's bidirectional, to use to what Stephen was saying, I mean, it's exactly what they would do. You know, real time. It would be able to real time sort of syndromic surveillance, which is sort of the holy grail of all of it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Aaron.
Yeah, this is great. I would agree. I don't think there's anything else I would add to this. I mean, it's pretty right to the meat of it. Well, I maybe this also. You could put something on. It would also help. It would help deal with outbreaks in an equitable manner, right? So I don't know how you would say that, but it would allow for if there were data gaps before, now we're able to see them and we're able to deal with maybe folks who have been disproportionately impacted. No, it's no problem. I'll be right back. Hold on one second.
It's Friday afternoon. Can you tell?
I know. We're down to you and me, I think, at the moment.
No, I'm here. I'm back.
Steven's
back.
Are
you back? Okay, great.
Sorry.
Steve, I don't know if you, when you joined in, we're looking at our story ideas now.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it. Sorry, I'm masked now because I'm going to sound a little weird.
We can take a minute to read over.
Yeah, this is helpful.
Arrive at your desk.
that second one, it refers to national standards to collect health equity data. I would say social determinants of health and other health equity data.
Sorry about that, y'all. Anyways.
And did you have any thoughts to finish on the public health idea?
No,
we're about
I
to
don't.
Start the other one. Okay.
Go. Nope.
And Stephen just gave me a phrasing idea that
I've. Yeah, I mean, it's more like a word order because you do mention it in the following sentence. But I just would just that I, you know, just because SDOH is sort of a term that we've all been using a lot, and I think health equity data is a little less clear in terms of its definition. So I would tend to refer to SDOH and other data relating to health equity or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You want to keep scrolling down? Oh, too far. There we go.
So Aaron, on privacy and security, this is in your wheelhouse. So it gets it.
Yeah, no, I'm reading it. I'm thinking. Yep.
Just making sure we all moved on together at the.
Yeah, yeah. Once to adopt application API. Yep.
You know, it's interesting in this privacy and security one. It says, you know, that all the laws protect the hospital from privacy and security concerns. I mean, it may protect them from privacy and security liabilities.
Right.
But not concerns.
Not the concern. It's the impact, damages. Right. That's right.
Well, I would use the word liability because I mean there can still be concerns, there can still be impact, there can still be damage, right? There's just not liability, and I think that's part of what you know providers are struggling with is, you know, I understand no one's going to be able to sue us, but what about our reputation? What about, you know, our patients? You know, we actually want to protect our patients. You know, we have a desire to do everything we can to assure that they're not negatively impacted, even though we're not liable.
Well, I would say liability, and I would also say, Michelle, compliance for information blocking purposes to allow for rapid release of data, right? I mean, I think all of us are, especially those of us who are really pro-information sharing, are trying to push the envelope and release, you know, almost real-time the data back to the patient, and it's having to work through these murky question marks that sometimes elongate that ability to rapidly do that from a technology sense. So there's compliance with information blocking, you know, rules that would be more readily serviced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand the idea. I'm just thinking through how we...
Yeah, how are you wordsmith that? But I mean, this allows for compliance with the federal mandates there.
And I think in the last sentence, it says minimizing the risk that the data would be disclosed or compromised. I mean, we're trying to disclose the data, so that's not quite the right word. It's that the data would be compromised or misused, I think, is really what we're trying to get at.
Right. It's like a higher fidelity of the data because we know that it's secure. And so for both clinical and non-clinical purposes, it's usable. Right. But other than that, I mean, I think the section is good. I mean, it's right on. In fact, real time, I had this conversation just a couple days ago with our development group that reported up through me, like, how can we get ready for this? And really, we do APIs now, but really take it to the next level and service the community. Okay. Want to go to the last one? Oh, actually, we got public comment, don't we?
Yeah, you have like 1 minute, I think, till public comment. It's up to you if you want to start this one now.
You want to go public comment and if no comments come back to this, or?
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Let's do that.
Sounds like a good idea. Thanks. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
All right. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. So let's finish this one up so that way we're done with this pass of it. Patient access information, results. All right. It's all about being better informed, right? And the ability for better individual choice because of access to information, okay? Carolyn, what are your thoughts on this?
She may not have come back yet.
Oh.
She stepped away when you were out, Erin.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got pulled away by our CEO. That's totally fine. All right. Let's see.
Can you scroll back up to see the first part?
I like this because it implies that there's an easy, consumer-friendly, ADA-friendly, equitable-friendly, lack of a better term, like the chapel that ONC has, that someone could go to a very basic understanding and read and say, is this app something I want to use or not use? And am I safe to leverage it, right? I like that because I think it sort of democratizes the ability for one to make an individual choice, and I'm all about that. I would think from a clinical perspective, Stephen, you and Brett probably would be like, well, hey, as a provider, now I better inform patients not to rely on some app made by some Yahoo telling them something wrong. And then they're challenging me and my clinical diagnoses of the patient.
My only hesitation is who does that process, because I bet you Stephen and I could sit down and look at 10 different studies and we wouldn't come up with exactly the same conclusions on all 10 in terms of what we would want to do with our patients. So I just, the first part that's on the top of that before we scroll down basically says, it's one thing to say safety, not safety, but the privacy piece. You start saying accuracy. Who's making that? Just from a clinical perspective, I'd want to know who's making that decision. That's my only. You could even measure usability outside of a clinical realm. But Steve, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean this stuff is tough because there are so many apps out there. You know, I mean I occasionally point people at apps that I'm aware of, but I mean it would be so nice to have some comparative data. You know, across the app.
Yeah.
I tell you. I mean, even just a catalog of knowing what's out there. I recommend, you know, blood pressure monitoring apps. I recommend, you know, sleep apps. I recommend meditation apps. I mean, how do you, you know, and there's more coming on the market all the time. Diet, exercise. Interesting. I mean, there's this whole notion that individuals have easy online access to new information about the validity and safety of mobile health apps. I mean, yeah, like when is that going to happen?
Well, that's the dream, right? And that's kind of what the whole point of these stories are, is if we can fix a lot of the things we've been talking about, this is what we could foresee happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we're avoiding the whole point that people have to want to engage in their own health literacy, but let's assume that you have an inclined person, which there are a lot more of these days, you know? I think this actually hits the nail. I'm just curious about Carolyn's. I know we're at time, but I really want Carolyn's opinion on this.
Okay, let's just round back with her offline.
Yeah, let's round back with her. So this is. I hope that was a good first pass, Michelle.
Yeah, it's great, and I think we're on the right track, it sounds like. So we'll bring this back again at our next meeting, and you can also send me any comments in between through email.
Perfect.
Great. Thank you, guys.
All right, y'all. I got to run. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have a good
Bye,
weekend.
Y'all.
Thanks.
You too. Bye, everybody.